The name of my talk today is The Bible's Answer to Cultural Decline. And subtopic is what were once vices are now habits. Now, back when I was high school, there was a band that was called the Doobie Brothers. And the Doobie Brothers came out with this album. They called it What Were Once Vices Are Now Habits. The album only had one hit song. The song was Black Water. You probably, some of you may have remembered that song, Black Water. Oh, Black Water, keep on rolling. Okay. So, but it's an interesting band. The title here of this album was, I believe, was inspired by a certain vice of that day, and that vice was called toking or smoking doobies. And doobies is a slang word for a marijuana cigarette. So this is this was the meaning behind this. What were once vices are now habits. And I, even though I tried to find what the band members, the leaders were had in mind, we couldn't find it anywhere. Apparently, this is something deep, dark, and hidden that they didn't want to get out. But I think we have seen what they were hoping for, and that is the proliferation of marijuana use throughout the country. The National Institute of Drug Abuse, it's some government agency, it tracks marijuana use in America. And it says today that there are 32% of high school seniors who have used marijuana in the past 12 months. Now, this is a big increase from what it was back in the early 70s when the doobies were talking about doobies. So it's gone up quite a bit since then. It sort of leveled off a little bit in the early part of the 2000s. We had a somewhat more conservative president during that time. And so things tended to level off, but then it's taken back off again, and now it's up to 32%. In fact, they say that 20.6% of American seniors use marijuana regularly. 20.6. One-fifth of American high school seniors now use marijuana. So this vice has now basically become a habit amongst a number of our young people, and of course through the much older people. The hippie generation now is in their 50s and 60s. They are what's running this country. And maybe that's why we have a problem with some of the things they come out with. The vice had a good push along the way, especially in the last 15 years, because two out of our last three presidents have admitted to using marijuana. So now marijuana, which was once looked down upon, is sort of fashionable because now even the presidents have been using it, and that makes it okay. Tobacco use, gambling, pornography, drug use, they've all become culturally acceptable in our country. And anyone who's an opponent to any of those is now called extreme. If you were to come out and say that drug use is bad, then you would be considered extreme in this country now. Colorado just got through legalizing the use of marijuana. And there's other states that are quickly following behind Colorado's example there. And so it's before long, we're going to see the whole thing get completely out of hand. There's other things, like you see on this slide, that used to be not acceptable, but are now becoming more and more acceptable. And basically, the culture of this is now becoming the culture of who we are. And this is the culture of Greece, right? And you can see what happened to Greece. Greece has gone to ruins. So that's where we're headed, and we're headed down this slippery slope to oblivion. So this is where our country is headed. Simply because something is considered the norm, does that make it right? This is the question that we have to come to grips with. You know, I remember my parents telling me, if all your friends go jump off a cliff, are you going to jump off the cliff with them? Just because they're doing what's considered, in their mind, normal, are we going to follow along? So this is something we have to consider for ourselves today. Is it okay for believers to participate in activities simply because they are the biblical or they are the cultural norm? And to make that even a little bit more difficult to answer, what if the Bible does not say, thou shalt not do this thing? If there's a cultural norm, but yet the Bible says, does not say, thou shalt not, does that make it okay to do it? Well, this is the beginning of a two-part study. In this particular study, we're going to talk about the cultural norm, what we have today, where we are, how we got here, and what we should do about it. We're going to look at examples of the cultural decline in America, determining the correct cultural norm, and then what we can do to turn it around. And then in part two, this is going to be the fun one, we're going to look at culturally acceptable practices versus biblically acceptable practices. I didn't spell that correctly. Acceptable practices. And see where these things come together and where they're far enough apart that we can make a clear distinction. And it's going to be a little bit fun when we do this. It's going to be interesting. So our plan for today, though, is to take and look at the examples, various examples of cultural decline, go to the Bible for direction in determining what the cultural norm should be, and then see what each of us individually can begin to do to turn these things around. Now, there's many examples of cultural norm. There's many examples of cultural decline, and they can pretty much be summarized in three broad topics. One is disrespect. The other is immorality. And the third is, of course, lack of personal responsibility. But we don't have time to cover all of these, and so we're going to take and focus in on just one area, and that is the area of disrespect. Now, I want to talk about disrespect because in disrespect, really disrespect encapsulates immorality and lack of personal responsibility as well. Because a disrespectful person to his neighbor or to his family or to his country is probably going to be participating in these other two things as well. So if we can solve the problem first of disrespect, we might be able to solve the rest of these things as well. So let's look at disrespect. And disrespect can be summarized in three different areas. Of course, it could be much more areas than this, but I'm going with broad categories. And one area is disrespect to elders. The second area is disrespect to each other. And the third area is disrespect to authority and to each other. Now, we can show disrespect in a number of different ways. Tell you what, let me see something here. We can show disrespect in a number of different ways. We can show disrespect to elders, authority, or to each other by a number of things, how we dress, what we say, what we do. There's all kinds of ways that we can show disrespect. But as we focus in on elders, there's some more specific ways that we disrespect elders. One of the things that sort of really gets my crawl, because I'm sort of an elder now. I'm almost 60 years old. I'm almost as old as my wife. I'm about to catch up with her. But that's one. So one of the ways we disrespect elders, like I said, it gets my crawl, is when I'm walking through a door and a young person just jumps right past that door in front of me. Any of you all experienced that? Okay, that sort of gets my crawl. Another way is not surrendering a chair to an elderly person. I used to have to ride the bus a little bit, and I was always told if an old person gets on there, you get out of that chair and you let an older person sit in that chair. So this was an area of disrespect. But the most common way of showing disrespect to elders is by calling them by their first name. A young person calling an elder by their first name. Now, when I was a kid, every adult was either dad or mom, grandma or granddad, aunt or uncle, Mr. or Mrs., and in the case of a teacher that was not married, we called her Ms. I had a teacher whose name was Miss Britton. Miss Britton. Miss Britton. And I always remember because she's the only one that would correct us when we called her Mrs. Britton. But her name was Miss Britton, and so we had to remember that. But that was common in our day. That was common for many of us who were growing up, that we always called our elders using one of those names. You know, this grandma or granddad. I didn't have terms of endearment for my grandparents on my mother's side. My father's parents were already dead by the time I was born. But on my mother's side, it was just grandma and grandpa. But, you know, there's this term of endearment that my grandkids call us by. We call them Saba and Safta, which in Hebrew means grandma and granddad. And so, but there's terms of endearment. But outside of the terms of endearment, we always called them grandma or grandpa. I always called my uncle, Uncle Bubba, or my aunt, Aunt Leon, or all of them. It was never a first name basis for for me to call any adult by their first name. The first time I can ever remember someone calling me by my first name, a younger person, or actually anybody calling me, I'm sorry, back it up. The first time I can remember anybody ever calling me by my last name only, or calling me Mr. Kelly, was when Angie and I got married. Because at the end of the ceremony, the preacher said, "Let me present to you Mr. and Mrs. Kelly." All right, so I had come of age. I was now a mister in some people's eyes. And that was sort of an interesting thing, you know. It's sort of you sort of lifted yourself up there. My feet were off the ground, not because of that, because I got married. But, but you know, it's interesting the first time you're called Mr., okay? How many of you guys can remember the first time you ever called Mr.? Any of you? All right, Larry Ken, Jonathan Ken. Okay, so that was an important thing to do. My employees were all, I've had employees since 1980-something, 82, 83. And all during that time, my employees would always call me Mr. Even the older employees. In fact, when I first started my business, most of my employees were my own age. But yet they called me Mr. Kelly. And it wasn't until I took and started telling them or asking them not to call me Mr. Kelly that they would stop doing so. But now today in our business, we've got guys that they don't know me because Jason runs our business. They don't know me except that I am the owner of the business. But yet they still call me Tim. And, I mean, they might be, what's our youngest one, 21, 22 years old? You know, they have no problem calling, "Hey, Tim," as if we've been buddies all our lives, you know. So it's interesting what's happened over the last 30 years in that regards. If I were to ask the adults in this room if they think that young people should call adults by their first name, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I would say most of you would say, "No, it's not really necessary." But deep down inside, you would say, "I wish they would." And the reason you would say, "I wish they would," is because you would wish they had that respect for you. Not because you're looking to be honored or anything like that. It's because you wish that they had that respect for you, that they would call you by your last name. Call you Mr. Larry or Mr. Cowan or something like that. So this is something that I think is important. And I think most of us that are older in this room, we believe that's important also. Unfortunately, our culture no longer deems that calling people by their last name, adults by their last name, is any longer necessary. And one of the reasons why that's the case is because we're in a society that now looks at self-esteem as being the primary goal for children, that we need to build up their self-esteem. This is sort of what we see here. We want children to think that they're lions, a kitty to look like, think it's a lion when it looks in a picture, instead of a child looking at itself and saying, thinking that he's a child, and realizing he's a child. So what we've done is that in our culture we have, because we're so concerned about the self-esteem of our young people, that we have eliminated this, what used to be a courtesy, a manner, it used to be called manners, of calling the adults by their last name. And we have begun to make the elderly people look like idiots. And by doing so, what this has done, it has sort of tried to bring the adults down to the level of the kids so that the kids can think, oh, you're my buddy, all right? When that's not really the way it's supposed to be. The adults are supposed to be honored. You know, Scripture says you are to rise before the hoary head. That's not just to give them a chair. That's to, as an honor to the hoary head, to the older people. So this is one of the areas that, in regards to disrespect, that I think is important. And it's an area, though, that our culture, as it declines, it goes down that slippery slope. We see more and more of that. And we're going to talk about this a little bit more later. The second area is in the area of disrespect to authority. Now, when I talk about authority, we're talking about parents, teachers, policemen, maybe even the President of the United States, because these are all authority figures. How we respect authority and how our children respect authority, but even us today, even as adults, how we respect authority is often based on what we were taught at home. If we weren't taught to respect authority at home, we more than likely don't respect authority as adults. Now, one of the best examples or the best ways to learn how to respect authority or to be taught how to respect authority is to take and have your parents teach you. And the parents, the way they teach it is not by saying, you say Mr. and Mrs. or you call your teacher Mr. or Mrs. or you stand up when your teacher comes in. The best way for them to do it is for them to show an example, right? To show an example. And because examples are the best teacher. And someone else's example is always the best teacher. Now, I remember a time back about, been a long time ago, 50 years ago. 50 years ago, President Kennedy was killed. And when, how many of you remember when President Kennedy was killed? Okay, I remember exactly where I was. I was in third grade. I was in Miss Hall's class. And one of the teachers came in crying and all that stuff. And so President Kennedy was killed. And it was on TV for 4 days straight. And back then, we only had 3 stations. And every station was covering every bit of it. Well, my dad was a man who always respected authority in what he said. My dad always called the president Mr. President. And even though he was a Democrat, he could not stand John Kennedy. President Kennedy. President Kennedy. He could not stand President Kennedy. And so we had, our TV at that time was downstairs. We had a little room we called the den. And so we went down there in the den, and that's all it would be on. And that's all we wanted to do is watch TV. We didn't care what was on. So this is all we were watching. And my dad would come down there, and he'd watch it for a while. And he was just as frustrated as could be. My dad, even though he respected the president, he showed his disdain in the things that he said otherwise, or his body manners and stuff. But the bottom line was this, is that even though he could not stand President Kennedy, he never, ever once called him anything but President Kennedy, or the president. So my dad was a good example in that regards. He was a good example in regards to police officers. My dad always told us to call policemen policemen. He would never let us call policemen cops. And so he thought that was wrong. And back then it was. Back then it was, to call a policeman cop was the same as calling him a pig today. Or maybe that was 20 years ago. I don't remember. So, but anyway, Bottom line is that we never called policemen anything other than policeman or officer or something like that. Now, that has saved me a number of times because I've been stopped a number of times for speeding or this or that. And when you jump out of the car and say, yes, sir, officer or something like that, it seems to soften them just like that. So anyway, this has been something that has been ingrained in me by my father. But there's other areas where authority has the respect for authority has gone down. And one of the key reasons why respect for authority is sort of plummeting in our country today is because of the authority figures themselves. We have a problem in this country today where have school teachers, okay? School teachers, because they're being called by their first name, are now becoming buddy-buddy with their boy and girl students. And so we have a problem, not only of declining grades, but we have a problem of them coming together intimately and having problems. You know what I'm talking about, right? Okay. So is this brought on because of just the huge amount of, I'm not going to say the word, SEX on television, or is this simply because now there's not this big divide between the students and the teachers? But teachers, almost overwhelmingly nowadays, are wanting their students to call them by the first name. I got on the internet and I searched this out, and I spent probably 3 hours searching this out, and I could not find a single school, not even a Montessori school, where they are changing back to having parents call their teachers by last names, or have they maintained this rule that the teachers are always called by their last name. Now, you do see, it's interesting though, even though you don't see that, you see a number of places where teachers expect the parents to call them by their last name. I keep mixing these up. I hope you can understand what I'm saying. But the teachers think that they should be called by their last name by the parents, but not by the students. So this is a problem we have. And of course, if they're mixing together, if the students the teachers being brought down to the level of the students, and the students are able to treat the teachers as if they're on the same level, then it makes it more easier for them to come together in inappropriate ways. Another example is in our clergy. We've seen a number of high visibility preachers over the years having relationships outside of their marriage. And of course, this does nothing but lower the respect for the clergy altogether. The Catholic Church is having a big problem with this. And, you know, if you were to look at what people think about the Catholic Church anymore, it's really gone down. And a large reason, I believe, why is because of the fact that the clergy themselves are not living up to the standard that they should. So the disrespect is being spawned by the people who are in areas of authority themselves. And then there's the matter of people in high office. We have for the last 2 out of 3 presidents, we have presidents who have openly and willingly lied to the American people. And so when they're out there lying to the American people, what happens to the American people? They no longer trust the highest office in the land. And so it becomes harder and harder for us as citizens of this country to want to call the president Mr. President when we look at him as maybe less than many of us because of his character and his morality as in the case of a previous president. So all of these things come together to where they cause more and more problems in regards to people and respect for authority. Now, this is a picture here of The Northwestern University women's lacrosse team in 2005. Okay, now looks like a pretty innocent picture, right? I know it's not real clear. But this picture here is a picture of disrespect for the president. And in 2005, the press in the United States, even the liberal press, probably more so the liberal press actually, made a big deal out of this picture. And you know why they made a big deal out of it? Linda knows. Why, Linda?
Because they were wearing sandals.
They were wearing flip-flops. And because they were wearing flip-flops, this was considered by everyone back 9 years ago as being disrespectful to the office of the president. Well, why? Because flip-flops weren't shoes. They had disrespected the president by wearing flip-flops to the White House. What would have happened if they had worn halter tops and short shorts? So these are all areas of disrespect. And this shows how our culture has declined over and over again. In fact, you might remember just two or three years ago, the President of the United States had his picture taken without a shirt on. He's on the beach. And his picture was taken without a shirt on. We've never seen a president, while he was president, in a picture with a shirt off. This just goes to show how things have declined in our country. I'm not saying that a man not wearing a shirt is terribly wrong, but it's interesting. It's interesting. Okay, the next area I want to talk about is to each other. Now, I'm going to focus in on dress in this regards here, because this is an area, there's a lot of areas where we disrespect each other. We disrespect our wives, we disrespect our friends, we say things about behind their back, all kinds of stuff that we do. So we could talk for hours on this, but I just want to focus in on dress. And just to start off again, it was dress that caused everyone to believe that these women from the lacrosse team were disrespecting the president. And it was simply because they did not have shoes on. Now, they had nice skirts, nice blouses. They looked presentable otherwise. And today, we probably wouldn't think anymore about that. But back then, just 9 years ago, this was a big thing. But today, it's quite common to dress as you please to just about any event, no matter what the sanctity of the event. It used to be that if you went to a graduation, a wedding, or a funeral, you dressed up. Why did you dress up? You dressed up out of honor for the people, out of respect for the people that you're going to. You know, funerals are not for the dead, for the living. And so I've gone to show my respects. Well, you can't really go and show your respects if you're wearing shorts. Okay? When you go to show your respects or to respect somebody, you show it in what you do, what you say, and how you dress. For instance, if you go to apply for a job, you know, I don't care what kind of job it is, the more respectful you look, the more your future or potential employer is going to look at you and say, hey, this person really wants this job. But a person that comes in there with shorts or ragged t-shirt or something like that, they're just telling their employer that I don't take care of myself, so I probably won't take care of your job, your business. And so dress is really important. But we used to do these things. We used to dress up for graduations, funerals, recitals. But today, jeans is the norm. If you go to a funeral now, it's not uncommon at all to see jeans. If you go to a wedding, it's not uncommon to see jeans at a wedding. In fact, I've gone to weddings where I've seen shirt tails hanging out of the tuxedo and all of this stuff. Now, this may be okay. I know we're sort of trying to relax a little bit in what we do as a culture, but I don't know if that's really getting us anywhere by doing this type of thing. But to go to someone's wedding or to go to someone's piano recital, in shorts or in jeans is basically telling that person who has worked and he's excelled and he's now willing to perform before you that this is not important enough for me to take and get out of my gardening clothes. So it's important for us to realize that what we wear to these type of things is important. I recently went to a funeral or a memorial service for a woman who is considered a matriarch in this area. She was much older. She was considered a matriarch. And so we went there, or I went there, and she wasn't able to go. And while I was there, I noticed the way some of the people dressed. And some of the ladies looked like they were just stopped by on their way to the nightclub. So this is not the way it's supposed to be. But this does show how our society has begun to cave. Somehow, in regards to funerals, we've gotten from... We've gotten from that to that. Okay? So, are we really, what's the term they're trying to use? Progressive? Are we really progressing as a people? Or if this is what progressive is, we need to stop progressing, don't we? We need to stop progressing. Now, as a nation, we're not progressing. What would have gotten us sent home from school or turned down to a job interview at a job interview is now considered normal. I remember, I've said this numerous times, but I remember it was the ninth grade before in my school in Cleveland, Tennessee, that girls were ever allowed to wear slacks for the one day that they called dress down day. So it was, and I was not in a conservative school. This was Southern Tennessee. So it's interesting how things are progressing. Okay. What we're doing is we're drifting away from what's good and decent, and what we would once call vices have now become habits, is basically what's going on. So this is sort of a glimpse of what our culture is. What we want to do now is look at and see what our culture should be. Now, many of us were born after the American culture began to change. And actually, the culture in America has changed over the years, but it's made a drastic change in the last 50 years. And so those of you who maybe under 40 years old, you may have not seen or may not recognize these things. What we used to call indecent now is considered norm in our society. But nevertheless, we can see that we need to get back to something better. Now, our history and our country, the country of our history, is based on the law of God and on Judeo-Christian values. Our founding fathers, people like George Washington, James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, second president of the United States, John Adams, these guys, they had vision and they had a good understanding of history. And they had seen how cultures had declined over the years in their history books. And so they wanted America to be different. So they envisioned a country based on something solid and immovable. They did not want the nation based on the whims of a king who this year may say this, may something else the next year. They wanted it something solid. So they based our country on the rule of law, and they patterned our nation after the nation of Israel, and they wrote into code called the Constitution a statement that says all our rights come from God alone, and that we should take and walk according to the will of God, basically, is what they had implied. The whole nation was based on that, and not only did they expect themselves to live that, they expected further generations to live that way as well. In fact, this is illustrated by a letter that was written by John Adams, President Adams, to the officers of the militia in Massachusetts. In this letter he wrote, "Our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people. it is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. So basically, if we don't have morals and a good, clear culture, a good, godly culture, then our Constitution is not going to do us any good at all. And that, I believe, is what we're seeing today. The Torah is based on two foundational principles: love for God, love and respect for God, and love and respect for each other. The children of Israel were given the Torah, and they walked the Torah pretty well for about 14 months. And then after that, they rejected their God, and the culture declined so quickly that within 40 years, that whole generation was wiped out. For 180 years, our nation has basically tried to rule itself by a constitution that was based on the law of God. And the way it worked is that we were a moral society, or for the most part, a moral society. We had love and respect for God and love and respect for our fellow man. But in the early 1960s, something happened in our country. And there was a ruling made that took prayer and made prayer in school optional. And for certain, you know, if you were a student that was that did not want to participate in prayer, then you didn't have to participate in the prayers that were given every morning in school. And since then, we have kept moving that goalpost to where now prayer in school is almost banned in practically every school except for private schools. So as we've taken God out of our culture and out of our schools, we're experiencing big cultural decline, and we're on the same slippery slope that Israel found itself on as they came out of Egypt. It only took 14 months for them. It's taking a little bit longer for us. But nevertheless, this is the same way we're heading. In our culture today, what was once considered bad is now good. In fact, we used to use that term. Oh, that's bad. What did we mean? It's good. Okay? So our culture has changed even in our vocabulary, the way we say things. Used to be gay was good. Meet the Flintstones, we'll have a gay old time. Remember that? Well, now gay is not so good because of the people that are participating in what's considered gay. Our culture needs to return to being based on God's law. We should reject the notion that people have the right to do as they please. This is one of the problems we have in this country. But to put their personal lust and desire, we should reject the notion that people have the right to do as they please, and to put their personal lust and desires above the love and respect for their fellow man. The Bible must be the basis from which we decide what's respectful, decent, and moral, so that we can take and get off this slippery slope and turn around. So what should we do? Or what can we do? How can we get off this slippery slope of cultural decline that will eventually lead our nation to destruction? I'm going to give three things we can do. And the first thing is we can begin to honor our parents. Deuteronomy 5:16 says, "Honor your father and your mother as Yahweh your God commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may go well with you in the land that Yahweh your God is giving you." Now, about 20 years ago, maybe longer, 30 years ago, about 30 years ago, I heard a man say this in a sermon. He basically quoted this, and he was saying it in regards to his son, who at the time had a trial, and he did not believe that the son should... He believed that God should remove the trial from the son because the son had been a good son. He had obeyed his parents, and he had... seemed like a very honorable young man. He was just a little bit younger than Angie and I. In fact, he may not have been any younger than Angie and I. But he was a good young man. And I would say he was an exceptional young man. But nevertheless, he had this trial, and he was going through it. And his father quoted this verse and said that, you know, because he was a good young man, then that God should prolong his days in the land. Well, I've often pondered that, what he said that day, and I really have. I've thought about that because Is this the intent of what God is saying right here? Is this the intent of what He's saying? Well, I want to suggest something else. I'm not saying that, but this man's understanding was wrong. I just want to suggest something else. And the way we're going to do this is we're going to take and look at this passage and sort of tear it apart a little bit. Okay, Deuteronomy 5:16, honor your father and mother, as the Lord your God commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may go well with you in the land that Yahweh your God is giving you. Okay, remember this passage was given, it was given first in Exodus 20, but it was repeated almost word for word again in Deuteronomy. And when Moses spoke these words in Deuteronomy, what was getting ready to happen is the Israelites were just days away from crossing the Jordan River and going into the Promised Land. Now, by going into the Promised Land, what were they going to face? Well, they were going to face a culture that was different from their own. And we hinted on that today a little bit in the book of Samuel when we saw that David went through and destroyed some of those cultures, some of those peoples that were in the land, that God said to just completely destroy them and annihilate them. And by annihilating these people, what did you get rid of? You got rid of their culture. Okay? So the children of Israel were getting ready to go into the Promised Land, and they were going to be faced with a number of cultures. So let's look again at this here. We want to see what the word honor means here. The word honor in this passage is kavod. It's Strong's 35:13. It's the same root word from which we get the term, the word kavod. Kavod. In fact, well, let's back up here first. Kavod. Let's go kavod. I got ahead of myself. We see kavod used in Psalm 22:23. And it says, "You who fear Yahweh, praise Him, all you descendants of Jacob, glorify Him and fear Him, all you offspring of Israel." So here, kavod is the word from which we get glorified. So to kavod somebody is to glorify them. All you descendants of Jacob, glorify Him and fear Him, all you offspring of Israel. And we all have a pretty good idea what we think glorify means. Now, kavod comes from, or is the root word from which we get the Hebrew noun kavod, or glory, which is Strong's 35:19. Kavod, but the word we had before, is a verb. It's an action word. It means that you do something. This is a noun. This is a thing, you know, the glory of someone. It's supposed to be something you touch, you know about. Okay? And it's used in a couple of passages here. 1 Chronicles 16:29, give to Yahweh the glory, do His name, bring an offering and come before Him. O worship Yahweh in the beauty of holiness. Excuse me. And in Psalm 4, verse 2, how long, O you sons of men, will you turn my glory to shame? How long will you love worthlessness and seek falsehood? So in these two passages, we see that we're to give glory to someone who is due glory. And secondly, that glory can be turned to shame. So if we take and go back in this verse here, it says, honor your father. If we say, if we substitute a different translation for the word kavod and say, glorify your father and your mother as Yahweh your God commanded, it makes a little bit of difference, doesn't it? We are to glorify our father and our mother. All right, now this Hebrew word kavod or kavod is translated through the Septuagint into Greek as the word doxazo, which is Strong's number 1392. And Peter used this word doxazo in this passage, 1 Peter 2:11-12, where he says, beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh. Now, let me preface this. He's talking to the exiles that were in Asia. His letter was written to the exiles in Asia. And Peter qualifies who these people are because he uses passages like in 1 Peter 1, verse 10, I think it is, where he says, you exiles of the the 12 lost tribes types things. You know, he qualifies who he's talking about. So we know who Peter is talking about. He's talking about the 12 lost tribes who are at that time in exile. And he tells them, he says, "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against you. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation." He could have, if he was speaking Hebrew, he would have said kavod. He would have been using the same word that we find in honor your father and your mother. So what Peter is saying here in this passage, that if you conduct yourselves honorably, then you glorify God on the day of visitation. Now, this word honorably is an interesting word. It's the Hebrew, or the Greek word kalos, Strong's number 2570, and it means excellent, surpassing, magnificent, and praiseworthy. And so what he's basically saying is, keep your conduct among the Gentiles excellent. Keep your conduct amongst the Gentiles surpassing, magnificent, praiseworthy. Now, who are the who are the Gentiles? The Gentiles are all the other people, not just the people he was talking about. In other words, what he was saying is that keep your conduct above board, above reproach, rise above everybody else. And he didn't say to do it just at church. He said, do it among the Gentiles, while you're among the Gentiles. So he's basically saying that what you do on a daily basis should be a reflection of your godliness, and it shouldn't be one thing for church and another thing for the Gentiles. You see? All right, so let's put this back up here. Let's put this back into this first passage. Honor your father and your mother, as Yahweh your God has commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may go well with you in the land that Yahweh your God is sending you. I believe what this is actually talking about is that they should, when they get into the land, they should honor their father and mother by not conducting their lives as the Gentiles. Do not go down to their level, is what he's saying. Because by going down to their level, what you're going to do is bring shame upon your father and your mother. Now, as parents, some of us know what it means to have to bring shame, for your children to bring shame on you. Daughters, when they go off to college, they oftentimes bring shame on their parents. It wasn't too long ago that Waters. Waters World on O'Reilly. How many of you watch O'Reilly show? Okay, you don't know what I'm talking about then. But on O'Reilly show, they every once in a while have this guy, his name is something Waters, I forget his last name, or first name. And he goes around and he finds some things that are just sort of strange in this country, and he reports on them. And one of the things he's reported on was the nude day at some big Ivy League college up in Boston area or something like that. And so he was interviewing, and he had his camera, and of course kept it above, neck high and above. He had his camera, and he was interviewing these gals. And they're all nude, running around campus nude on nude day at this college. Now, imagine if you were a father or a mother, and you saw your daughter on national TV, knowing she's nude outside and being interviewed by some guy that she doesn't know. Would that not bring a little bit of shame? Or especially if your fellow brother at church came to say, "Hey, I saw your daughter on TV the other night." It'd make you feel about that tall, right? All right. We bring shame on our parents by the things we do. Getting drunk and being stopped by the police and having to be brought home by the policeman. brings shame on the family. There are all kinds of things we can do. I would submit that some of the things that the Israelites could have done to bring shame on their mother and father as they went into the land would be to adopt various parts of the Canaanite culture. For instance, shaving shapes in their heads, in their hair and stuff. Marrying the Canaanite woman. We know that when Esau married Canaanite women, what did it do? Rebecca and Isaac were very frustrated about that. How about giving children Canaanite names? Would that not have really frustrated the parents and brought shame upon the parents? So if the children, as they crossed over the land, honored their father and their mother, then what would that imply? That would imply that they maintained their Hebrew culture in a culture that was not their own. So I believe this is probably more closely what God is talking about when he says to honor your father and mother. We bring honor and glory to our parents by avoiding the culture of the day, by returning to the walk of our parents and what our parents consider respectful in that day, and by avoiding the ways they consider disrespectful. Now, with that, we have to always understand that if our parents are totally outside the walk, and to them what's respectful is to go out and sleep with a different woman every night, obviously we would not want to honor them and their wishes, because that goes against the law of God. But in many cases, when the older generation does maintain a level of respect above those who come along later. All right, so I'm going to talk about one other thing here. Actually, I'm going to talk about two. Okay, second thing we can do is reject the status quo and turn toward God's walk. This is an admonition that was given to the children of Israel by King Solomon at the dedication of the temple. And he knew, even though he was living at that time in the greatest nation on earth, he knew that culture was going to decline. And so Solomon said this, and I'll read it real quickly. "Yet if they turn their heart in the land to which they have been carried away, and repent and plead with you in the land of their captors, saying, 'We have sinned and have acted perversely and wickedly,' if they repent with all their mind and with all their heart in the land of their enemies, who carried them away captive, and pray to you toward their land, which you gave to their fathers, the city that you have chosen, and the house that I have built for your name, then hear in heaven your dwelling place their prayer and their plea, and maintain their cause, and forgive your people who have sinned against you for all the transgressions that they have committed against you, and grant them compassion in the sight of those who have carried them captive, that they may have compassion on them." So what Solomon is saying here is that he knows that the Israelites are going to go into exile. He knows that they're going into exile because of their sins, and it might be generations before they return. And what God is telling them, or what Solomon is telling them, is that when you're there and you come to realize what you've done, then you take and set your mind to turning back to God and walking in God's way and honoring God in the things that you do. And you do it while you're still in exile. You don't wait until you come out of exile. You do it while you're still in exile. Because he says if you do that, then maybe they will grant compassion in the sight of those who have held him captive. In other words, this might be our key to safety, is by returning to God and walking in God's way and doing things that we know that are right, even though our culture is doing something that we know is wrong. All right, so a third way that we want to talk about is to seek the old ways. We should begin to seek the old ways. Jeremiah wrote about 100 years, 50 to 100 years before Judah was taken into captivity. He saw Judah on this slippery slope to decline. He knew that they were going to be taken captive pretty soon. But, of course, they didn't. The Israelites, or the Jewish people at that time, traded their Hebrew culture for that of the pagan nations round about them. They began to observe the ways of the peoples that had come into their land. So in prophesying about their imminent doom, he said, Stand in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths where the good way is, and walk in it. Then you will find rest in your soul. So when you have come into captivity, then if you will take and turn to the old ways, the ways of your parents, the old ways that we know are right, then maybe you will find rest in your souls. As the remnant of God, we should flee from the culture that's enveloping us. We need to seek the old ways, the old paths, the honorable and glorifying ways of those who came and gave their lives hundreds of years ago for our freedom and so that we could walk in the ways of God. By doing so, we can become a light to the nations and a glory to the God of Israel. So, in the next talk, we're going to find out, we're going to look at and try to define what is the correct culture. A lot of things in the Scripture are not real clear, but I think there's keys to understanding it. And as we go through these things, I think we can help define what the culture should be as opposed to what the culture is today. And I want to do that. It won't be the next time I talk, but it'll be the time after that is what my plan is. But what we're going to do is we're going to see if our culture and the culture of the Bible agree. Things like this. Are these things biblically acceptable? Are they culturally acceptable? Are they both, or are they neither? So we want to look at those. This is going to be more of a input type talk where we're just going to throw these out and get ideas and see if we can find some common ground in that regard. All right, so with that, I would say shalom aleichem, peace be unto you. I hope I haven't stepped on anybody's toes, but nevertheless, that's where we are. Any questions or comments?